numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
This is Stuart Venner. I tell it as I see it, and I see it as it is.
It was interesting,
but it was also stupid.
The opinions expressed by Stuart Venner are not necessarily the views of the station and should be regarded as rantings of a very sick, perverted mind.
This is Stuart Venner. I want to welcome you to this week's show. We've got a really good lineup of guests in store. We're speaking to Bill Ferguson. He's a relationship expert, and he's going to let us know that it takes more than love to make a relationship work. We're also speaking to Reba Merrill. She's an award-winning Hollywood reporter, and we're going into her adventures and even a little bit into her sex life. We're also speaking to Nick Theopoulou. He's calling us from Australia, and he's going to talk about what men do right. You ask my wife, she'll tell you nothing. Finally, we're talking to Rob Shattuck and Kalini Miley. She's celebrating Engineers Week. Rob is an engineer, and Kali is an aspiring engineer. And, of course, we always end our show with our stock market moron, Fred Claridge. Lost a million in one day, and he'll tell you what to do, and then you do the opposite, and you'll make a lot of money. Stay tuned. I know you're going to love the show.
And I know that everybody, and I know that everybody be happy, as happy as you and me. Cause I know. Come on, baby, let me tell ya all the things I wanna say. Come on, baby, let me tell ya all the things I wanna say. And everybody's gonna be happy, which means you and me, my love. Everybody's gonna be happy, which means you and me, my love. And I know, and I know that when I see you walking down the street, well, it makes me happy to see you walking. It makes my life complete. Cause I know. Come on, baby, let me tell ya all the things I wanna say. Come on, baby, let me tell ya all the things I wanna say. Everybody's gonna be happy, which means you and me, my love. Everybody's gonna be happy, which means you and me, my love. And I know that you and me, and I know that you and me be happy, as happy as we can be. Cause baby, let me tell ya all the things I wanna see. Come on, baby, let me tell ya all the things I wanna see. And everybody's gonna be happy, which means you and me, my love. Everybody's gonna be happy, which means you and me, my love. Everybody's gonna be happy, which means you and me, my love. Everybody's gonna be happy, which means you and me, my love. And I know.
Folks, welcome back to the show. I've got a really interesting and important guest on the line. We're speaking to Bill Ferguson. Bill is a former divorce attorney, and now he's a relationship expert. And he's been on Oprah. He's been highly touted by the Wall Street Journal. And what we're talking about is that it really takes more than love to make a relationship work. That's your words, right, Bill?
Yes, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into this and what you've come up with.
Well, I started out as a divorce attorney, and what I saw was that on the surface was all the anger and the resentment and the upset. And then I saw that what was underneath all the upset was a tremendous amount of hurt. And then always what was under the hurt was the love. You know, we wouldn't be upset if we didn't care.
That's very interesting.
So one thing I learned very quick is that love never, 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 never is love enough to have a relationship work.
That is very true. So you mean a lot of people...
I treat you lousy, so what if I love you?
Yes, a lot of people got divorces where they really loved each other and maybe they could have made that relationship work properly.
Oh, absolutely, and I see it all the time.
Uh-huh.
See, the thing that makes the difference in relationships is not the love, it's the experience of love. If I interact with you in a way where you feel loved, our relationship will be great. And if I interact with you in a way where you feel unloved, our relationship will be a mess.
Very interesting. And you've been quoted as having the penicillin of psychology.
Yes. Yeah, because it's...
Well, that's a good word. Who attributed that to you?
Actually, there have been a lot of different physicians. It's just people have said that a lot of times over the years.
I think maybe women need some penicillin.
Well, one of the things that I've learned is that any time there's a relationship or any area of life that isn't working, that which we think is the problem is never, 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 never the problem. It's always the symptom of something deeper. And until we can resolve the something deeper, nothing changes on the surface.
Well, there's so many things that can cause stress in a relationship. Kids, and I don't know anything that can cause more stress than that.
Well, the number one biggest killer of relationships, by far, the number one biggest killer of relationships is not being at peace with the truth of the way that somebody is.
Not money?
No. That's, that can add stress to make it harder to be at peace with the truth. See, look at what creates love. See, it's the experience of love that makes the difference. What creates the experience of love is giving the gift of acceptance and appreciation.
Very good.
So if I genuinely accept you and appreciate you just for who you are, just the way you are, well, you feel empowered. You feel loved. You feel great. Your walls of protection come down around me, and then automatically you then become more accepting of me, then I become more accepting of you, and you become more accepting of me. And then we create that cycle of loving, supporting, and empowering each other, which works, which is what we want in all of our relationships, not just our romantic relationships, but with our kids, our friends, with everybody.
Well, I think
you're so
right.
And what creates it is giving the gift of acceptance.
So you have to be willing to accept people's...
What destroys love is being non-accepting.
Okay, that
makes
sense. You
need to change. You messed up. What's your problem? What's the matter with you? and as I do that, you get hurt, you get upset, you put up your walls of protection, and then automatically you then give it back to me. Then I get upset, I give it back to you, you give it to me, I give it to you. And then we create this cycle of conflict, this cycle of hurting, attacking, and withdrawing from each other that just kills the relationship.
You make a lot of good common sense, Bill. Now, what have you... I know you've written a book, which we're going to talk about in a second, but what have you been doing to get your message out? Do you lecture? What have you done? And are you doing?
Well, I do a lot of stuff on the internet. I have the e-courses, a bunch of videos, the books, do workshops with people, do individual work with people.
Are you still practicing law?
Well, it just walks people through the process, literally transforming their life.
So are you still doing divorce law?
No, I haven't practiced law in a long time.
I can't blame you.
This is a lot more fun.
I can't blame you there. Can you tell everybody your website?
Yeah, you can go to relationshipseminars.net.
Okay, relationshipseminars.net. And we're talking to Bill Ferguson.
Yeah, has a whole lot of information about relationships and what it is that creates the problems in relationships. Because the things that are the problems aren't what we see. See, all of our focus is on he said, she said, but that's never the problem, that's the symptom.
It's the hurt and the that causes so much of the problem. And then one tries to hurt the other one, then get even and make it worse.
Every one of us has this hurt from the past, this childhood hurt of feeling worthless, not good enough, not worth loving. And that becomes like a nerve or a button that keeps getting triggered.
Right.
And then in relationships, have a relationship with this lady, and she does what she does, strikes this nerve in me. I don't notice that I've got a nerve triggered. All I notice is what triggered it, which is her. So I think she's the threat. So I put up my walls of protection, and I become defensive, judgmental, critical towards her. That strikes her nerve. And then she reacts, strikes my nerve, I strike her nerve, and it's back and forth.
And then you've got a tsunami going on at that point.
Yes, and it's this, this hurt that can get healed, but it's this deeper hurt that destroys our life. And every single area of life that doesn't work can be traced to the automatic avoidance of this hurt, because in the face of this hurt, we're threatened.
That makes
a
lot of sense.
We operate in a state of fear, upset, and tunnel vision. We destroy our ability to see clearly. We get defensive, and we act destructively.
Bill, are you married?
Yes.
And you use your own, your techniques in your own life?
Oh, yes. And I've learned a lot of this the hard way.
Haven't we all? I'm on my third marriage now, but I'm very happy. This one I'm very happy with. But I know how to push your buttons. I'm really good at it.
Can be one of the greatest things on the planet, and a lousy one can be one of the worst.
That is for sure. Bill, could you tell us the name of your book and how people can get it?
Yes, the book is How to Heal a Painful Relationship.
Okay, is it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble?
Online, get an e-book, okay. iTunes, you can get it just about anywhere.
Well, I'm going to read it myself. Everyone out there, if you have any kind of relationship or care about it, you should read Bill Ferguson's book, How to Heal a Painful Relationship. Because this is the penicillin of psychology. Not the penicillin, but the penicillin. Bill, thank you so much for coming on the show. Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. BuyYourTimeshare.com. That's BuyYourTimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME. Folks, welcome back to the show. I've got a wonderful guest online. We're speaking to Reba Merrill. Reba is an Emmy award-winning journalist, and she kind of specializes for many years in interviewing stars. She goes all over the world and interviews famous personalities and entertainers. Reba, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us, how did you get started doing this?
I was fired from a local talk show because I was too old.
Well, I can relate to that.
I was in my 40s, but I'm a woman. So one of the things I did while I was doing the morning show in San Diego was to go to Los Angeles and interview movie stars on a press junket. And it was done by invitation only, and only 50 people were invited.
That's
and
very
I thought
cool.
to myself, well, if I'm so old and nobody wants to look at me, then I'll try to get some television stations that will take my interviews and then they'd let me do the movie star interviews. It was a simple thought of, I want to keep working and the world doesn't want me because I'm too old a woman. I was 44, actually.
Well, so you have to do your own thing, really. I've always had to do my own thing because I just figured nobody would ever hire me. I'm just too
exactly.
obnoxious.
Well, I think when you're in the business we're in, it is a little bit more difficult that we do have to be proactive, as they say.
It's
and
true.
And we have to be able to live with the slings and arrows, because that's also what happens. And a lot of times I carried that around, that too old, which is a running theme in my book, is how it affected me for a long time.
It can be very depressing, too, I imagine. It's got to be.
Well, actually, I wasn't depressed. I got more I'll show you. It kind of lit a fire in me.
True. That's true. You know, if you look at the TV today, all you see are these airhead kids.
Well, I have to say this, that I was replaced by a 22-year-old. Granted, she had no crow's feet, and probably her thighs were perfect, but she didn't know how to interview, but she did know how to giggle.
Well, yeah, and she probably had perky boobs, and that helps.
Oh, definitely perky, and I'm not the least bit perky.
Well, sometimes it's not who you know, I don't want to say it, I'm starting to get dirty, and I can't do that.
No.
I can't do that. Tell us, who was one of the most interesting people you've ever interviewed?
Well, he falls into the category of challenging, interesting, and boy, was I surprised. While I was still working on television, they sent me up to L.A. to interview this young man, and I was so totally bored that I did something I had never done before and I will never do again, as I glanced at my watch. And what was going through my mind as he was talking was, God, will this be over soon? 3 weeks later, the film that we were talking about opened. It was called Star Wars, and I was sitting down with Harrison Ford.
Really? Isn't that something?
So when I go back to interview him again, I thought, I have to really, really do my homework to see what makes this guy tick. And so I come in to interview him for Air Force One, and I said to him, don't worry about the questions. I know all the answers. Well, I had no idea that what I was really saying was, I've done my homework.
I didn't realize,
because I hadn't done my homework on the first interview, that he will respect you if you know what you're doing. And
exactly.
So the first question, which I will give to you, because remember the film is Air Force One, he plays
sure.
the president. I said to him, are you getting back at all the bullies that beat you up at school because you play the greatest hero? Oh,
that's a great question. That's a great question. How did he answer
it?
And
he looked at me, and a small smile came up. And he said, I was the sport at recess. Came to a new school, and they threw me down the hill every single day. Got myself up, dusted myself off, and went back.
It's terrific.
But don't feel sorry for me. The girls took me under their wing.
That is great. I bet no one ever asked them a question like that.
Well, somebody had to, because I found it on the internet.
Well, they probably heard what you did.
Nope, I found it first. I mean, I found
it.
He said to me later, I'm surprised you asked that. I only told it to one person. So whoever the one person was, and maybe not in the form of a question, but in passing, put it on the internet.
So as you said, you do your homework, you know what you're doing. It's like in any business, if you don't know your stuff and if you haven't done your research, how do you expect to succeed?
Well, that's true, but when you're doing a show 5 days a week for an hour in the morning, and then they want you to work on weekends, I just did the production notes that the studio gave me, and they were totally different from the way and the style of interviewing. Right now, I'm going through my vault, and I'm pulling out these moments that I can't even remember, because you think you're going to remember every interview, and you don't.
No, it's very, very hard to.
And so we're going through it. My editor happens to be my daughter, so she's having a field day. She says, Mother, look where you went. And to give you an example, when I started working in the international marketplace, where my interviews went to 60 countries, I was very much aware that my voice, which was used for timing and reflection, was being used by men, not just women. And so
that's interesting.
Very early
that's very interesting.
Deal, I sat down with Robin Williams and I said to him, I knew what I wanted to say is that my voice was being replaced, but instead I said to him, I have no sex.
Did he try? Did he offer to help you?
A woman. And he looked at me and he said, "Get that woman a Roto-Rooter. She definitely needs help." Well, when I saw, I didn't even remember this. Okay.
That's very funny.
My brain is a little different. I was very careful. I only said it one other time, and I said it to Mel Gibson, and the studio jumped on me and said, "Why are you propositioning him?" And I said, "No, I just wanted him to talk to me neutral." But, you know, so
that's
we went
funny.
And we found these things, and I want to share one with John Travolta.
John Travolta.
Is that all right?
Yes.
I said to him, last night I asked my husband if all his dreams had come true, and he said no, and he asked me. And I said, "More than ever." I said, "What would happen if your wife asked you that question?" And they just react in such a positive way because I'm not nailing the movie,
yes.
Which is what everybody does when they get these 10 minutes with a movie star. They just want to talk about the movie.
Sure.
And I always wanted to talk about the star. And he said to me, "My life is bigger than I ever imagined. I feel like I'm living in somebody's novel, maybe two novels." And I thought, you know, that was
great. That's interesting. So
now, remember, I couldn't use any of this stuff when I worked for the studios. They're now part of my private collection.
So you really get to the meat of things, but you're not a gossip. You're not
a
gossip columnist, are you? You don't write gossip. You just get important information directly from the people.
Well, I think they're just like us, only in the spotlight with money.
That's right. That's really it. Are you living in Los Angeles now? Did you make that your home?
Yes, I live in a place called Marina Del Rey.
Oh, I know where that is. I was born and raised in Los Angeles.
Born and raised in Baltimore.
You were? I'm sorry, what did you say?
I was in Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, yeah, I was just there a couple weeks ago. Terrible weather.
Great crab cakes.
You're living
crab.
In a much better place now. The marina is beautiful.
Yes, beautiful.
It really is. Well, can you tell us a little bit about the book you've written and how people can read it?
Well, the book I wrote, called Nearly Famous, Secret Lies and Addiction, is a secret that I kept for a really long time. And No one, not any of the studio people that I worked with, and I worked for over 23 years, ever knew who I really was. I kept my past a secret. I kept my addiction a secret, though my behavior from addiction did cause me to lose most of my career at one point. And I thought I would never tell the story of who I really was because I was really embarrassed. And then once I made the commitment and went to my family and asked if it was all right, the only person that knew my past was my current husband, and we've been married for a long time, but my children never really knew, even though they were part of it. They were very young and never knew. And then it just poured out of me.
And how did your family feel about you writing your autobiography?
Because there's a lot of sex in it, my daughter, who I worked with, and I work with, laughed and said, "So what else is new, mother?"
Well, and you got to have a lot of sex in a book to make
something.
It good.
This was done in the 60s, and she laughed because she said, "I didn't do anything that they're not all doing today."
That's right. It just was more out there in the 60s, I think. That's my era.
No, none of this was out there in the 60s. The beginning of the 60s was very much like the 50s, and it was who you were, what people thought of you. It was all about upstairs, downstairs.
But it was bra burning and free love. I mean, there was a lot of that going on.
I was raised to believe that what people thought of you were more important than what you thought of yourself.
That's true. Well, I know I wouldn't want to write an autobiography because my parents, they were in the iron and steel business, Reba. My mother ironed and my father stole.
You're fading away from me. Do you think it's because I'm living with fog right now?
Reba, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You're delightful.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, buyyourtimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
A manly song I like to sing, a manly song my manly friends all sing along as we sing our manly song. I am a manly man who lives a manly life in my manly house with my manly wife and two manly children and a manly guinea pig. My cell phone's very small, and my TV's really big. A manly song, I like to sing a manly song. My manly friends all sing along, as we sing our manly song. I was driving like a man, when my tire blew off the hub. So I grabbed my cell phone manfully and called the auto club. I stood there like a man until they came along. And as she changed my tire, I sang a manly song. A manly song, I like to sing a manly song. My manly friends all sing along as we sing our manly song. Then we say hey, we say hey. It's fun to say hey, 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 hey in a manly way. How I long for the days when a man was a man, when belching was a sport and chest hair wasn't banned, when we would all get manicures and eat manatee stew, when little's all we did and nothing's all we knew. A manly song, I like to sing a manly song. My manly friends all sing along. Long, 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 as we sing our manly song.
Folks, welcome back to the show. I've got a really great guest on the line. We're speaking to Nick Filofalou. He's calling us all the way from Australia. He's quite a distinguished person. He's a producer. He's a therapist. And he's worked with couples and individuals. And he has written a book about 10 stories about what men are doing well. Nick, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, you say things that men do well. If you ask my wife, they don't do anything well.
Yeah, I've heard that many, many times, I can tell you.
I bet you have.
No, when I talk, I'm sorry?
I bet you have.
Look, when I was originally beginning to write the book, there were the people would say things like, my husband doesn't do anything well. Other people said it was a complete waste of time. And there are others who said the book was very timely. So you got the whole gamut of opinions, but it left you feeling sort of quite angry and very sad, actually, because I thought it's a shame that people have to see see other people in such a stereotypical sort of way, so it made me even more determined to write the book.
Right. I mean, I'm making a little light of it, but it is a very serious thing. I mean, the men's self-esteem, I think everybody's self-esteem is kind of important.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's quite a normal thing. I've seen it many, many times where the woman will say something to the fellow that is really actually a put-down. And it's, it's said really quite consistently, and I hear it a lot. And I really don't think it's good for the relationship at all.
Well, what do you think is one of the most important things or something that a man can do to try to earn a little self-esteem or to have a little respect, especially if he's married? If that's not an oxymoron, I don't know.
What can a man do? I think one thing that he can do is sort of really listen to himself and say, and just ask himself what's the most important thing to him, and go for that, whatever that happens to be. And if his partner puts him down, well, he needs to say, you know, this is really upsetting me.
Right.
And it's no good for our relationship. You know, the world has changed a lot. I've been staggered by the research that I've read about men, which tells me that a lot of men really are stepping forward, and particularly with fatherhood. You know, men are embracing fatherhood and almost wearing it as a badge of manhood nowadays. They want to be the best father possible, and I think that is something that is, for me, has been definitely the story of the 21st century so far in relating to men, and it's been borne out by the research.
Right.
I mean, 30 years ago, your badge of manhood was to go to work, earn as much money as you could, and your wife look after the kids, and you saw them for, you know, 5 minutes a day at the end of the day. But now, a lot more men are learning the joys of fatherhood, and they want more of it.
Well, that's right. Also, you know, as you were saying, things back in the 50s, it was different. Everyone had their place.
Absolutely.
Today, women are out working, and they're actually doing the job that men used to do, so I guess it empowers them a little more.
Well, I think so. It's the whole when it comes to what people do with their lives, that people don't live by the stereotypical patterns that they did years ago.
Well, I personally let my wife make every major decision in the house. I find that works the best. I let her decide who's going to be elected President of the United States. I let her decide whether or not we should bomb Iran. That's totally her decision, not mine. And I just want to make the little mundane decisions about how we spend our money and live our life.
Look, if you're happy living like that, well, good luck for you. And I know a lot of men who really do live like that. And if you're happy living like that, it's fine. I think nowadays, really, basically anything goes, and it's between what you negotiate between you and your partner.
Right. Well, tell us a little bit about your experience. I noticed that you produced a film inside a men's group, and you've written a book, which I'd love you to tell us about.
Yes. Well, I made the film a few years ago now. It's basically to show people what actually happens when men get together. What sort of things do they talk about?
Uh-huh.
And it just so happens during the film that they spoke a lot about their fathers. And I've been surprised at the reception the film has received. I've been very, very happy with it. It's sold well all over the world, and it still sells. In relation to the book, I would say a lot of men are finding that they're actually quite okay. They're okay, you know. And what I mean by that is that by hearing other men's stories, they realise that, you know, everyone struggles. A lot more men are talking nowadays. A lot more men are talking to one another and realising really they're not alone, and that the whole life is a struggle. But we can all help each other share that burden of being alive. But it's a much more connected sort of world in that sense.
Yes, it is. Well, I kind of like the old days. Just keep your wife pregnant and barefoot. That worked for me.
Well, look, good. Well, if it works for you, well, I'm really happy for you. I mean,
worked for me. I've been married three times. I'm very happy this time. Very happy. I've got a beautiful wife.
Good.
She's 25 years younger than me. Everything is very good.
Oh, very good. Yes, okay. Well, look, it's no one's really going to argue with you if it's a situation that suits you and your partner. No,
right.
I mean, they can, but ultimately it's your life, isn't it?
Right. Well, can you tell us how everyone can find your book, Nick?
Well, just go to Amazon.com.
Okay.
And type in the words 10 stories about what men are doing well.
All right. Now, everybody, you heard that. You go to Amazon.com. 10 stories about what men are doing well by Nick Theopoulou. He's an author, a counselor, doesn't own a Greek restaurant. Nick, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Folks, welcome back to the show. I've got two great guests on the line. We're speaking to Rob Shattuck and Kalyani Malela. I said that right, didn't I?
Yes.
We're going to be talking about Engineers Week. And Rob is quite a substantial, very well-recognized engineer. And Kalyani, right?
Yes.
Is one of his, he's mentoring her, is what I'm gathering, and she's quite a promising engineering student and a new engineer, right?
Yes.
Well, I want to welcome you two to the show. Can you tell us about Engineering Week?
Sure. Let me kick off. Engineering Week is a celebration of engineering and engineers and their contribution to society. In fact, at T-Connectivity, we just did a survey of the American people, and now engineers come out on top as being the most recognized for creating innovations that change society. And that's a big change in the last few years,
yes,
recognizing.
And, you know, from what I've seen, talking to engineers and people that I know in that profession, that's one of the very few professions where people just really love their work. I mean, you really have passion because you're making something, like an architect. I mean, what you're seeing was really turning into fruition.
Yeah, you sure do. In fact, engineering is a lot about problem solving and making stuff. And, you know, when I'm interviewing for engineers, I always, you know, look for those that have gone into engineering because they're curious and because they like making things. And that's how they enjoy their work. I know Kalyani has a lot of fun doing this stuff.
And I think it's so versatile that, let's say you're an electrical engineer, today you might be working on hearing aids, and after a few years you might decide, hey, I want to go work on pacemakers. You can switch. So it's the same engineering degree. You can go to a different avenue and make the difference. I think that's what keeps you exciting as an engineer.
Kalyani, what made you get into this? What made you have the passion for this?
So I grew up around engineers. My father, my uncle, they were all engineers. And seeing them, some of them were technically in the field, some of them went into management, and others were entrepreneurs and started their own business. So to me, engineering seemed like a good foundation for anything that I wanted to do after I grew up. And I grew up around my mom, who was a stay-at-home mom. She wasn't an engineer, but it's the skill set that she instilled in me. It was always about ask the why. It's not the end result that matters, but it is how you get there. So those are the things that helped me define me as a good engineer.
Are there more women going into this field now? Because this was primarily, I think, a man's profession up till late.
I would say right now there are more and more women in the field. There's just a lot more diversity in the workplace that I am and where I work today.
Yeah, and there's, in fact, as part of the Discovery Week, they run a competition, Future Cities competition, where 6th, 7th grade school teams compete to design cities of the future. And one of the things I noticed at the finals was that the teams were dominated by girls.
How very interesting.
It's great to see more women coming into engineering.
That is
wonderful.
Diversity
of thought.
Now, our country, are we in crisis? I mean, there's an awful lot of competition coming from all over the world today. I think America used to be at the forefront of everything, but I don't know, is that true today?
I think America is still at the forefront of an awful lot of technology and engineering innovation. There's no question about that.
That's good.
But, you know, it's competitive. We've got to keep running ahead.
Well, they've got the Chinese copying and trying to improve everything we make.
Well, I think every emerging economy does that. You know, when I was growing up as an engineer, it was the Japanese that were copying and improving everything we make.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, what happened in the U.S., you know, is the engineering keeps innovating, and you know, you've seen things like Twitter, Facebook, social media, and now you're seeing a whole new generation of wearable technology and hardware devices. You know, the cool hearing aids that Kalyani makes, Nest thermostats, Google Glass. There's a whole new generation of innovation coming.
What do you think we're going to be seeing? What do you think the biggest thing we're going to be seeing soon is in technology, really?
I would say the wearable technology and where it is going, it helps you connect with your rest of the environment, like monitoring your blood pressure, where you're going, how your stats are. So it's the culmination of medicine and engineering and the problems and the solutions that come out of that culmination.
Yes, I think, you know, we've just gone through this revolution of, you know, PCs to laptops to tablets, and
the other piece of wearables is going to be disaggregating the communication device, you know, projecting the screen in front of you, like Google Glass, having, you know,
it's amazing.
Much tinier hearing aids. It's incredible stuff.
I just heard the other day that at the CES show in Las Vegas, they came out with motorcycle goggles where you can actually see television or a computer on it. That's got to be dangerous as hell, though.
Yeah. When I'm riding my motorcycle, I don't want that. But you can get these head-up displays now for your motorcycle helmet, and there's a new one with all-round visibility, so you can see the traffic coming up behind you, get great situational awareness. That's fantastic.
That is amazing. But I don't think I'd want to watch television if I was on my motorcycle.
No, me definitely not.
And tell me, Rob, where do you work? What is your main job?
Well, I'm the CTO of TE Connectivity, and I spend my time almost globetrotting between our 16 design centers and our 100 factories.
Fascinating.
I spend a lot of my time in the Bay Area, where my home is, but other than that, I'm always on the road.
But you're British originally, aren't you? I can tell.
Originally, yes. I grew up in London and, learned how to make things at my great-uncle's workbench.
Well, I looked at your picture, and you're a nice-looking man, and you must have engineered your teeth, because you don't look British.
There's always jokes about British dentistry.
And, Kalyani, where are you from?
I'm from India.
Ah. There's a lot of technology. India is a huge country.
It is.
Yes, it is. Well, I want to thank you two so much for coming on the show. Can you tell the folks out there how they can learn more about what you're doing? And do you have a website or something you'd like to share?
Yeah, so you can learn more about Engineers and Engineering Week at discoverwithane.org.
Okay, so that's discovere, with a big E at the end, .org.
Yes.
Okay. I want to thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, buyyourtimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Even if Fred was a little special, Fred was kind with good intent, but just a little different. Oh, special Fred. Mama dropped him on his head. Now he's not so bright instead. He's a little bit special. Just a little bit.
Folks, we have our weekly segment with Fred Claridge, our stock market moron. If you don't remember, Fred was able to lose over $1 million in one day. Fred, welcome to this week's show.
It's always great to be. It's great to be any place, but it's especially great to be back with you.
How's your portfolio doing?
Well, yesterday was an incredible surprise. I actually called a computer guy to come out and see if there was a mistake, but I was actually up a tremendous amount yesterday.
You made money. But, well, that's
well,
a,
no,
really.
Well, no. The day ended. That was in the beginning of the day. By the end of the day, I was up a little bit, and, you know, God bless it. Today, I'm giving it all back.
Oh, my God, Fred. I tell you,
I really have a great stock for you today.
What do you have? Which one?
This could be an all-time wiener.
Okay.
You know, usually the stocks that we talk about are what I call itwits.
Okay.
Itwit is, I wouldn't touch it with your, you know, your
okay,
dick.
Okay, well, which one do you recommend?
The one today is a company. This is the largest oil drilling company in the world by market capitalization. The name of the stock is Seadrill. The symbol is SDRL. But what's amazing about this company, it's near the low of the year. And just so you know, all of the oil drillers are really getting butchered.
Right.
But not only that, this company has a yield of 10%. In other words, they pay a dividend that comes out to close to 10%.
Sounds like a good stock.
SDRL. Now, the good news is it's down 241 today to 35.27. I bought it yesterday.
So what are you in at?
I'm in it at 3 points higher.
Well, then this is the time to buy it. As long as you're losing, it'll probably work for everyone else.
They pay a dividend of $3.80. They came out with earnings. The earnings kind of, as they would say, disappointed. But this really is a great, great stock.
All right. Now, everybody out there listening, tell us the name of that stock one more time.
Seadrill. It's Seadrill Limited.
Okay.
It's actually a four-letter symbol, SDRL, but it is on the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, it sounds like a good stock. The only problem that I have is you bought it. But everybody,
but
if you want to take a chance, you know, Seadrill sounds pretty darn good to me, and I may even buy a little bit myself, but the big fear I have is Fred is in on the stock. Can't you tell us when you sell it? Then I think it would be a good time to buy.
I sold a whole bunch of stocks yesterday, and every one of them is going through the roof.
Well, that's always what happens. So
come
back next time. Tell us when you sell your Seadrill, and then we should all jump in on it.
Well, I have to wait till it goes a little lower so I get a good loss.
Fred, thanks again for coming on the show. We look forward to next week to hearing about your adventures.
It's always my pleasure, and don't forget Seadrill. I'm telling you guys, you're going to love it.
This is Stuart Venner. I really want to thank you for tuning into this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, talk with us, or make suggestions for topics or guests, then follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Stuart Venner or Facebook at facebook.com/Stuart Venner's World. Remember, you can hear all of our shows and see what's new at stuartvenner.com. If you want to hear the Stuart Venner Show in your own area, contact your local radio station and request us. In fact, hound them. Tune in next week for more amazing guests and stories. Thank you.
Ah! I wet myself.
Aren't you ashamed?
Good night, until we meet again. Adios, au revoir, I'll be the same.